This is an educational series by the Ukrainian Fire Chaplain Show. I wanted to give you a heads up that we had some technical difficulty on these four episodes on Ignatius of Antioch. The original seven first episodes of the Ukrainian Fire Chaplain Show were done on Clement of Rome and Ignatius of Antioch on a condenser mic, which failed, and I did not realize that it had failed until after I got into post-production for these four episodes on Ignatius of Antioch. So I had to use some backup audio. I want to give you a behind-the-scenes tour real quick of our studio, where I have made some pretty sizable upgrades in order to give you a lot better quality and listening experience. So stick with these four episodes on Ignatius. I did polish the audio quite a bit, even though it's backup, and I know you're going to enjoy it. Thanks.
So let's go ahead and skip on down here and try to finish up this episode. We'll get partway through the Epistle of Ignatius to the Magnesians. We're going to start here. Chapter 2 kind of recaps a lot of the things that he talks about in his Epistle to the Ephesians. So we're going to go ahead straight into Chapter 3. Now it becomes you also not to treat your bishop too familiarly on account of his youth, but to yield to him all reverence, having respect of power of God the Father. So he's talking about be careful of looking down and being a respecter of persons, right? Looking at somebody because of their outward appearance and really focusing more on, you know, whether or not they have the divine authority given to them, whether or not they are an actual leader and speaker of the truth. For him, you know, that possession and profession of the truth and that legitimate authority is far more important than what we would consider worldly aspects of respect, especially at the culture and the time that would really give a lot of respect to age as opposed to youth. Submitting to him, or rather not to him, but to the Father of Jesus Christ, the bishop of us all. It is therefore fitting, and again, so you see that whole conception there that I talked about in our first episode, where there's this connection between the Father being the bishop, you know, and Christ being the deacon. We'll see that come out a little bit more in his other epistles. It's therefore fitting that you should, after no hypocritical fashion, obey your bishop in honor of him who has willed us to do so, since he that does not do so deceives not the bishop that is visible, but seeks to mock him that is invisible. So, you know, a rejection of church authority for him, you know, is a rejection of God's authority. The two are inseparable. And for some that would say, well, where is this in the Bible? I would ask you to take a look at this passage from Jesus where he says, you know, those who reject you reject me. You know, is that relevant here? Ignatius, I think, is developing that saying of Jesus a little bit and giving us a more clear understanding of how that is carried out. Chapter 4. It's fitting then not only to be called Christians, but to be them in reality, as some indeed give one the title of bishop, but do all things without him. Now such persons seem not to be possessed of good conscience. They are not steadfastly gathered according to the commandment. And what commandment is he talking about? He's talking about Jesus' commandment for unity, and in John 17, that they may be one, and also that we would gather together to celebrate this in memorial of him, which we'll find in some of a later work that we'll cover of Ignatius. Let's skip down to chapter 5. In love, the character of God the Father by Jesus Christ, by whom, if we are not in readiness to die in his passion, his life is not in us. So again, you know, Ignatius here views that, you know, if we're not ready to imitate Christ's passion and to pay the ultimate price, at least in spirit, then we really have not made room for Christ in our hearts, even if we confess him with our lips. Skipping now to chapter 6, I exhort you to do all things with the divine harmony while your bishop resides in the place of God, your presbyters in the place of the assembly of the apostles, along with your deacons who are most dear to me and who are entrusted with the ministry of Jesus Christ, who was with the Father before the beginning of time and in the end was revealed. And so we begin to see here, you know, this presentation of Christ as being pre-existing before the beginning of the world, that some aspect of him, right, you know, not in his humanity, but in his divinity, is the Son of God, you know, eternally pre-existing. We can kind of see that a little bit here. We can also see this threefold role that connects the deacons with Christ, and also, you know, this distinction between the bishop and the priests and the, so to speak, between God the Father and the assembly of apostles. Let nothing exist among you that may divide you, but ye united with your bishop and those that preside over you as an evidence of your immortality. Skipping now to chapter 7. Do nothing without the bishop, as therefore the Lord did nothing without the Father, being united to him, neither by himself nor by the apostles, so neither do anything without the bishop and the presbyters. But being together in the same place, let your prayer be one, for there is one supplication, one mind, one hope, and the love and joy undefiled, just as there is one Jesus Christ, than whom nothing is more excellent. Therefore, run together as into one temple of God, one altar, one Jesus Christ, who came forth from the Father and is with and has gone to one. And again, you can kind of see why Ignatius is called the doctor of church unity. And he's talking in this first part of chapter 7 about not doing anything without the bishops and presbyters. You know, does this mean we have to ask for, you know, permission slips to go to the bathroom? It's not what he's talking about. He's talking in particular context that I had suggested earlier, where you have these factions developing within the Christian community, where some who had adopted that Greek philosophy and thought matter was evil, you know, they were not participating in Sunday worship. The Judaizers were not participating in Sunday worship. They were having their own separate services on the Sabbath, and they were rejecting that church unity to preserve, you know, those Jewish observances, or they were rejecting church unity because they didn't really want to, you know, accept, you know, the early church's understanding of Eucharistic communion. And Ignatius is not saying that, you know, you need a permission slip to go to the bathroom if you want to start a business, building tents or something like that, or if you want to go on vacation, you need the bishop's permission or something like that. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about doing all things with the bishop when it concerns, you know, matters of faith and morals and matters of church unity. Skipping down to chapter 8, for if we still live according to the Jewish law, we acknowledge that we have not received grace. And again, this is one of those communities that he was dealing with. And it's, you know, honestly, it's something still to this day with Seventh-day Adventists and Jehovah's Witness and Jewish Christians today that, you know, reject Sunday worship and talk about keeping, you know, Jewish observances. If you're not circumcised, you're damned. Ignatius, is that what he views as, you know, being, you know, an authentic teaching of the early Christian community? I don't think so. Skip down to chapter 9. If therefore those who are brought up in ancient things have come to possess a new hope, no longer observing the Sabbath, but living in observance of the Lord's day, on which also our life has sprung up again by him and his death, who some deny, by which mystery we have obtained faith, and therefore endure, that we may be found the disciples of Christ, our only master, how shall we be able to live apart from him, whose disciples, the prophets themselves and the Spirit, did wait for him as their teacher? And so this is one of the clearest instances,
right,
of this distinction between the Sabbath and the Lord's Day. And some would say, well, no, the Lord's Day was the Sabbath. That's the same thing. But that's not what Ignatius is using the word as. Ignatius is using the Lord's Day, which would become much more clear. You'll find this in Justin Martyr. You'll find this in the Didache. You'll find this in a lot of people that will look later in future episodes about how the Lord's Day was the day of the resurrection. It was the day of Sunday. It was the day of the sun in pagan terminology. But, you know, it was the eighth day that the Christian community came to affiliate the day of Jesus's resurrection with being the day of celebration. Why keep the day of rest when we should keep the day of feasting and celebration, which was the day that he was risen from the dead? As Ignatius references here, on which also our life has sprung up again by him. Let's skip down here to chapter 10. Therefore, having become his disciples, let us learn to live according to the principles of Christianity. For whosoever is called by another name besides this is not of God. It's absurd to profess Christ Jesus and to Judaize, for Christianity did not embrace Judaism, but Judaism embraced Christianity, that every tongue which believes might be gathered together with God. And I think that's interesting because he's very clearly making this distinction again between practices of the Christian community and practices of the Jewish community, and how there were changes. And we find that in the Acts of the Apostles and the reference to the decision made by Peter at the Council of Jerusalem there. But he's very clearly saying that those who would continue to persist in certain Jewish observances were endangering their standing as Christians. Skip down to chapter 11. I desire to guard you beforehand. You may not fall upon the hooks of vain doctrine, but that you will attain full assurance in regards to the birth and the passion and the resurrection, which took place in the time of the government of Pontius Pilate. And so he is really clearly affirming, you know, a human birth, a human suffering and death, and a physical human resurrection of Jesus Christ at a particular moment in history under Pontius Pilate, the Roman, authority at the time. And he's really saying that, our religion and our faith is not this delusion and stuff like that. It's a historical religion. Our key figures lived and walked at a particular location, were born and lived and died under specific men. And those who would debate that are not only taking an issue with our faith, but they're also taking an issue with history. Let's skip down to chapter 13 here. Study, therefore, to be established in the doctrines of the Lord and the apostles, so that in all things, whatever you do, you may prosper both in the flesh and the spirit, in faith and love, in the Son and the Father and in the Spirit, with your most admirable bishop, the well-compacted spiritual crown of your presbytery, and the deacons who are according to God. Be subject to the bishop and to one another as Christ is to the Father, both according to the flesh and according to the Spirit, so that your union may be both in body and soul, or both fleshy and spiritual. Skipping now to chapter 14, which is going to be the last one we take a look at. For I stand in need of your united prayer in God and your love, that the church which is in Syria may be deemed worthy of being refreshed by your church. And so what he's talking about is the importance of mutual prayers for each other. We don't really see this development yet at this time period of whether saints pray for us or not. But he, as a very humble individual, who's attained this great respect, this great esteem, has had this amazing ministry of influence, he still does not view his salvation, his outcome, as guaranteed, in the sense that he might not falter or fall. He still expects others to pray for him and to support him and to help him run this race. He views this challenge of journeying with God as not being a once-and-done type of event, but being something that's an ongoing struggle until the very end.
Once again, this is your host, Christopher, of the Ukrainian Fire Chaplain Show. If you have not already, go ahead and look at our website, theufcshow.com. It's got information about us and ways that you can follow, subscribe, or support us. We're on various podcast platforms. We're on Facebook and YouTube. And if you're able to, consider supporting us on Patreon. Also want to give a shout out to Daniel Atchison, the music artist Atch, for permission to use his song Forever in our productions. Until next time. Would like to offer my special thanks to the Antiochian Orthodox choir group Incense for letting us use their song The Great Perkimenon. You can find links to their music in the description.